Do note that the views expressed in Thinking It Through do not necessarily represent the views of Good News Community Radio. The views expressed in Thinking It Through are meant to serve as a challenge to your beliefs, whatever they may be, and to see how the Christian worldview stands in light of other worldviews.
Welcome back to Thinking It Through. We end this week with a relevant study of the Book of Revelation in a fireside chat with Dr. Gregory Donation, resident minister at United Mission, as he responds to questions on the Book of Revelation. Here's Larice Furry in part 30 of Understanding the Times.
The event of him being thrown down to heaven in chapter 12, as it's described here, is sandwiched between what we assume to be the birth and ascension of Jesus, but before the church is sent, you know, into the wilderness in this scene. But then I know that Jesus, during his ministry, told his disciples, I have seen, or I saw Satan falling.
Out of heaven like a flash of light.
Yeah, so in that context, Jesus is speaking about it as a past tense event during his life and ministry before his, you know, ascension. So it can be confusing.
Yes, the reason is we are living in the domain of time. Mm. But where this took place was outside the domain of time. So if I can compare it to a matchstick which I put in the palm of my hand, if I'm on the matchstick, I'm somehow limited to whether I'm in the beginning or somewhere in the middle or somewhere towards the end. But if I'm looking at it from God's perspective, I can see the beginning and the end. It's all one matchstick to me. There's no sequence of time there. So this happened, this fall of Satan happened outside the realm of time. So it's not yesterday, today, or tomorrow. Where do you fit it in? It's from this perspective that it took place, and it's impacted upon that matchstick that lies in the palm of my hand. So in a certain sense, you could say, when the Lord Jesus died on the cross, that is when Satan fell out of heaven. You'd be correct, because heaven is here. There's no yesterday, today, and tomorrow in heaven. It's an eternal now. And so whether the Lord Jesus was crucified there or in the Garden of Eden, Satan had fallen out of heaven. We read about Paul saying, the land that was slain before the foundation of the world. But he was only slain 2,000 years ago. So how can he be slain before the foundation of the world? Well, when you look at here, even if it happens on the matchstick at a particular point in time, from here, it was whether it was the beginning or the end, makes no difference. It's an eternal now.
In chapter 13, we read about a beast that's coming from the sea. Does this beast from the sea represent any specific false religion or all the various false religions broadly, sort of just in general idolatry? Because this beast is said to be pointing humanity to worship the beast that came before it. So is it a specific religion or all false religion?
It must be seen in the context of the three domains that are mentioned here, because these three entities that are revealed are connected to one to another. They are family, and I'll indicate that now. We read the first of these trilogy of beasts would be chapter 12, verse 3. One is now the woman, but verse 3 says, another sign appeared in heaven. So mark that. In heaven. And this sign was an enormous red dragon with 7 heads, 10 horns, and 7 crowns on his heads. Look at that pattern. It's 7, 10, and 7. But he was a dragon. He appeared in heaven. Now, when you come to chapter 13, verse 1, I saw a beast coming out of the sea. So the first one was heaven. This one is C. He had 10 horns, 7 heads, with 10 crowns on his horns. Now the first one was 7, 10, 7. Now you have 10, 7, 10. A reversal of the order. And on each head was a blasphemous name. Then it goes on to spell out who that beast is. Then we see in verse 11 of chapter 13, I saw another beast coming out of the earth. He had 2 horns like a lamb, but he spoke like a dragon. So you can see the connection here every time. The amount of heads, the amount of horns, and then finally, even though this one doesn't have the same number of heads and he doesn't have the same number of horns, he spoke like a dragon. So if he opens his mouth, you know that he's belonging to that group. So there are these three that appear. Look at the domain. The first one is in the sky. The second one is in the sea. The third one is in the earth. Now, where did we encounter something like that before? The answer is in Exodus chapter 20, the Ten Commandments. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. The first commandment, you shall have no other gods before me. He elaborates on that and he says, you shall not make for yourself a graven image. Where? In the heaven above. Or where? On the earth below. Or in the waters under the earth. Interesting that those three terrains, those three domains were mentioned. That's exactly where these characters appear. So as such, they have identified the scope of full-blown idolatry. So the sea also throughout the book of Revelation symbolically represents the cauldron out of which all wickedness comes. So this beast that came out of the sea is almost a pivotal point, the center one, and the others are almost sort of around it. But this is the one that's, you could say, the CEO of that whole unholy blasphemous triad that is there. Later on in Revelation, you read when the new heavens and the new earth are sort of described symbolically to us, it says, and there will be no sea. Specifically mentions that this cauldron, the cesspool of wickedness that produced all that was evil, will be removed. It will be completely taken away. So that is why this beast, being part of the triad, the unholy triad, not a trinity, but attempt to be a trinity, but it's a triad, three main gods, you could say, in this pantheon of gods, why it surfaces as an executive forcing the others into idolatry. This is the power, the mysterious psychic power that works on people's hearts and minds to make idolatry attractive to them. I don't know if you had seen the opening of the Commonwealth Games and how that symbolically it shows these people are just wanting to submit to this calf, this bull, in worship. Yeah.
Yeah. Is the emphasis on the ocean being the evil place, is it connected to Genesis, that idea of the chaotic, watery state before creation?
It might have. The Hebrew phrase that is used in Genesis chapter 1 is tohu vebuhu. And even though you can give a definition to each of those terms, they are normally used as a phrase. And it refers to a chaos. It refers to disorder. It refers to a state of being before God's plan surfaces and emerges. Because from the moment God says, let there be light, he addresses the tohu in the first 3 days, and then he addresses the verbuhu in the second 3. So in Genesis, you come to understand that even though this is the state of affairs, God remedied that. He dealt with the disorder, the formlessness, the voidness, the emptiness, the shallowness, the state of almost disrepair that things were, the chaotic things. He brought order, he gave it form, and then he filled it with the fullness that he produced. So indeed, yes, one could say there is a hint at it. The whole of Revelation is deeply saturated with Old Testament theology. It's immersed in it so that all the truths from the Old Testament are sort of pulled up into it, and it's given the beautiful perspective from a New Testament angle.
Pastor, how will the beasts control the economy? How will they control who can buy or sell?
One single verse, and that's not from Revelation, but it's the love of money. The love of money is the root of all evil. And because the devil has been around for a long time, and he knows the heart of man, and he knows that there's nothing more powerful than the love of money, materialism, the love of possessions, what I have and what I've got. If you look at what 1 John tells us also in his analysis of worldliness, you will see that he says that there are these three things that stand out as a main threat for the well-being and the survival of a true Christian. He says in verse 15 of 1 John chapter 2, "Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him." That's the main issue. Verse 16, "For everything in the world," and here he spells out what it is, "the cravings of sinful man," also known as the lust of the flesh, "the lust of his eyes, and the boasting of what he has and does not come from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but the man who does the will of God lives forever." So there, same John who wrote Revelation tells you, this is the root problem, is man's lust after possessions, his love for money, which is the root of all evil. So if that's the root of evil, what do you expect now? In what way will these entities, the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet, in what way will they now capture the hearts and minds of people? The love of money. So that's why material possessions, the love of money, is a very, very useful tool. It dominates everything. It controls people. People are obsessed. They're not worried about culture so much. They're not worried about aesthetic things so much. It's about how much money can I make? We can't have a holiday because I'm going to lose $2 billion in this day that we've had a holiday. So it's an obsession, you know. We can't be normal because we've got to consider what's the cost. You know, if I want to do this, I can't do it because of that. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've just also learned that in the time when Rome was over, you know, the world, enabled to access the marketplace, when you enter through the gate, you have to burn incense to the idol of that specific town or city. And so I know that in the author of Revelation and his original readers, fresh in their mind, when they read that unless you have the mark of the beast, you can't buy or sell, they would have been intimately aware that unless you enter the market space and burn incense to these idols, you cannot buy goods and you cannot sell your goods. You cannot make a livelihood. So it's interesting how that was a manifestation of how Satan works, but also it's a principle that's applicable to our day and time.
Well, there you have it. Thanks, folks. We hope to be with you again next time.
That was Dr. Gregory Donation in part 30 of Understanding the Times, a relevant study of the Book of Revelation. To listen to Thinking It Through again, go to iono.fm and search for Thinking It Through, or download the free GNCR 93.6 app from the App Store and go to Podcasts. Join us again next week for part 31 of Understanding the Times. Till then, have a brilliant weekend.
If you have any feedback or queries regarding Thinking It Through, please email it to thinkingitthrough@gncr.org.za. You can find the live stream, GNCR mission statements, and more at gncr.org.za.